Do
la,
hey,
la 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 la.
Do you want the funk?
You want the funk? Gotta no, have no, that no, funk.
That's great. It is 1:36 on the episode O-meter.
Episodomer.
Well, that doesn't sound right.
That's
a phrasing issue there.
Yeah, we've got to work on that.
It's Tuesday. It's episode 136 of On Taking Pictures. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris from Faded and Blurred. With me, the are you guys snowy? Fancy and snowy?
No, not snowy. Was a little rainy. It's not quite cold enough to snow. Although I think this week we're supposed to get snow.
Fancy and we'll chilly, see. Bill Wadman?
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Hey, right up front.
Yep.
Star Wars trailer. What'd you think?
I liked it a lot. I thought the fact that they didn't show any of the old people was really smart. I thought it looks very J.J. Abrams, which I'm fine with because I like his aesthetic.
I do too. I think it looks more Star Wars-y than the second prequels. Trilogy. Yeah.
I totally agree. The one scene that got me, and I know you disagree, the scene that got me was the X-Wings flying over the water.
Oh, I love that scene. Right. I love that scene.
But the Falcon does it for you.
The Falcon at the end. Yeah. Just the way it blasts onto the screen.
Yeah. I'm a kid of the 80s. I love the Millennium Falcon, but it was never my favorite. For a lot of people, that's it, right? Everyone wants the Millennium Falcon.
I had the big, like, what, 36-inch wide or whatever, the giant.
Yeah,
you know,
sure, I had one of those. You know. But I was more of a, I always, like, in my fantasies, I would always be flying an X-Wing or a speeder.
All right.
As a kid. So I like the little ones. But it looks really good.
Yeah,
like, if they don't mess it up, and I don't think J.J. Abrams will. It could be really fun, but then again, you know what? Everything's just a movie in the end, so it's like.
I was a 10-year-old kid again.
Oh, absolutely! But you know what's amazing is the fact that people are having all these arguments and conversations and ripping the thing apart. It's like this isn't coming out for a year. What you're probably seeing are first tests of 3D models and renders that they're working on. You know,
sure.
This is not the final thing. It's a year away.
Yeah,
you know, they just finished principal photography like a week and a half ago or something.
Yeah,
you know,
and you're right; they are tearing it apart. There's the gaffy stick was on one shot, but it wasn't on the other.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Ugh.
And the only thing I will say that makes me a little weird the whole lightsaber thing with the little the little ancillary things.
Right.
That just seems dangerous.
Yeah, it seems like you could hurt yourself more than your enemy with those.
I did like the fact that the lightsaber at the end was like a little sparkly and flame-like.
Yeah.
Like they added sort of this other layer to it. It wasn't just like this stick of light. This energy thing that kind of peters out at the end.
There was a neat sound cue when it was like, you know, when he kind of slams his hand out to the side and the thing, you know, fires up. I like that.
Yeah,
like
it sounded like it was firing up, like it was like starting an engine.
Yeah.
That was really cool. You know, somebody said, man, where was it? It might have been Syracuse or one of those guys. He said, you know, the one thing that a lot of people always forget is that Star Wars is not a space movie. It's a knights and it's a Middle Ages movie that happens in space. You know, it's clans and knights and the empire and rebellion and all that kind of stuff. It just happens to play out in space, but like it's not a sci-fi movie. It's a fantasy movie that's in space. You know,
and I could see middle age. I could see Western too.
Yeah, and so it's different than your average space like a Star Trek movie. I think it looks great. I hope that they don't oversaturate. The trailers, like if they put this out, they put out one more next summer and then maybe a little tiny one right before. Cause like, you don't need to trailer this movie. You don't need to build hype. It's
right.
It builds itself.
The hype's going to be there. Yeah.
So don't overdo it. Don't, steal the thunder from the movie before it even comes out. But anyway,
I watched Snowpiercer.
Wait, which one's Snowpiercer?
It's a, they're billing it as a sci-fi flick. I don't really buy that, but
the train thing.
The train going around the world.
Yeah, I had to watch that with Conrad for her show.
I think it's weird. My favorite thing about it was Tilda Swinton, who was just fantastic.
Yeah, she was all right, and there was one other thing about it that like kind of.
And I love Ed Harris, but I think he was wasted. His talent was wasted on that part.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was a little. He didn't get the chance to. You never gave up anything in your life. Now fight.
Yeah,
fight!
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
You didn't get any of that.
Nice Abyss reference, Wadman.
Thank you.
That's going back.
I love The Abyss. That movie's great.
I do too. It's one of my favorite movies.
Still
ever.
Not remastered HD.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, quit working on Avatar and go back and do that.
Exactly.
Cameron, if that's your real name.
Yeah, like that wouldn't sell on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what are we talking about today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, speaking of you know, Star Wars-y kind of gear, your phone died.
Yeah,
and you've been borrowing another phone from a listener.
Yeah, from a listener. Yeah.
So thank you, Weathersby.
Yeah,
if that is your real name,
saved my bacon.
Yeah,
and this is not to talk about my phone so much as to talk about the thinking around my phone and how it pertains to photography. I had an iPhone 5 and I broke it. And I'm borrowing a 5S from Mr. Weathersby, and I got to get that back to him. So I've been thinking about what I'm going to do to next, you know. And I, for some reason, I can't justify spending the $800,000, $900,000 on an iPhone 6. Because you know what? For most of the stuff that I do, my iPhone 5 is just fine, you know.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of having a phone that is a little sort of beat up, you know,
yeah.
Like it's been worn a little bit.
Well, I mean, we tend to make them a little precious.
Yes. Terribly so. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I have a 5 as well, that I have taken sandpaper to the edges and corners of. So it looks more worn than it actually is, but I like it that way.
Yeah.
Then I'm not worried about it.
Right. And I spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I kind of think a friend of mine's got like a broken one that the screen's broken. I might be able to buy that off of him and use the screen that's working on mine and put it together and have a working machine.
I think it would be really cool to have this sort of, you know.
Yeah. Like
hybrid thing. I'd like the assembled.
You know what I'm surprised about? And I looked around online and there really isn't anything about it. People modding these things. Like
modding how?
Cracking them open and having alternate, like there are a couple like alternate things where it's like clear on the back or whatever it is, but they're usually crappily made. I'm surprised there aren't people who have really like put in a bigger battery by using a bigger backside and you know what I mean? Like done all kinds of like neat stuff to them. I'm surprised no one's done that or replaced things with wood and you know what I mean? Like really gotten into it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the point of this is, it kind of gets back to things being worn, and it kind of reminds me of that Winogrand Leica, right? You know, the classic one we put the picture up of.
Yep.
Where it's all like worn away in the edges. And you even showed me just now on your iPhone 5 where the edges are like worn away, right? Where the anodized
aluminum. I've sanded it away.
You actually sanded it away.
Yeah.
Because in I think we were sort of simpatico in this. It's like we both sort of referenced the blasters in Star Wars. Yep. Where it was tech, but it was beat up, and that was okay, because it still worked, you know? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a little bit that way with cameras, too. Like, I've had my cameras get worn away on the edges. I haven't bought a new lens in years. And even the lenses that I have, yeah, they're a little beat up, or like my 85, the front ring where I put the cap on, somehow I banged it somewhere and I dented like around the edge. So the cap is tight when you kind of try to push it on.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. But it all just works just fine, you know?
Right.
And I think that we have this, you know, this week you and I were, you were talking a lot on the interwebs, and then you and I were talking a little bit offline about how you were thinking of selling your X Pro and buying something else. And
which just for clarification doesn't have a mark on it.
Yeah, it's just perfect.
It honestly, it looks like you just took it out of the box.
Well, have you actually taken it out of the box?
Wow. Well, when I shot pictures of it to sell it.
It's just funny that you know, I've tried to in the last few years reduce my desire for new's sake.
Right. Your tech footprint, as it were.
Little bit. Yeah. And I mean, and not just from the point of view of, I mean, yes, there's all the be better to the earth, so there's less e-waste, and do I really need it, and saving money. Like, all those things are part of it. But there's also this idea that, like, you build a relationship with your tools the longer you have them, you know? And you start to realize what the limitations are and what the strengths are and, you know, sure. the little nitpicky things. It's like the person who has the car for 10 years and knows everything, knows when it makes that sound that this is wrong with it or what have
right,
you.
Right.
And and I feel like we all sort of talk about how that's something that's been lost from the move to digital, because it's all about swapping out the bodies all the time, because that's where the difference is, you know.
Sure.
It's trying to do more with what you've got. You know, my 5D, does it have as many pixels as I'd like it to have? Well, no, but it's got plenty. You know, is it as fast as the fastest camera? No. It is the lightest as the lightest camera? No. But it does all those things pretty well. And it takes pretty good it takes great video if you use it right. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's sort of trying to find the one tool that can do all the things that I need it to do. And maybe it doesn't do all of them as well as I can, but it works just fine. And that is not my limitation, you know?
Right.
And you have to sort of make it so that you realize that that's not your limitation, so that that's not the game you're playing in your own head. I don't know. That's just where I was going with it.
I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you have gone through that. And I'm going through it, and
you're just like, but I'm getting a new camera.
Well, I'm on the side of there are some limitations. What my camera does, it does incredibly well.
Right.
But I want to go in some different directions.
Sure.
That it doesn't go in.
And I think that's one of my one of the reasons why I still use what many consider an old school digital SLR. I'm putting it in quotes.
Is a Mark III an old school digital SLR?
Well, compared to the people who like EVFs, I mean, and these tiny Micro Four Thirds things with no mirror box, and you know what I mean? Like,
but it's still Canon's flagship. I mean, down from like the 1DX, it's still Canon's flagship SLR.
No, absolutely. But you understand what I'm saying? Where it's like to a lot of people, it's the last of a breed that has been around for 20 years,
right? I will say that neither Canon nor Nikon at the moment are doing anything really exciting.
It's
the Sonys and the Fujis and, you know, that are really stirring things up.
Yeah, or trying new things, whether or not they've come up with anything that actually is
right. You know, Sony comes out
improvement. Who knows?
With the A7 II, little tiny full frame camera with 5-axis stabilization. Yep. Nikon comes out with a gold version of the DF.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and you could say that. Well, so far, Nikon and Canon haven't had to, because they still sell loads of these things, because people still buy them because there are 4,000 lenses available every street corner for them and that kind of stuff. You know?
Agreed. Yeah. That said, I think both of them are reporting losses this year.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. You know what it is? For me, one of the reasons why I use the old school thing is that it's not compromised in any of those ways in order to... It doesn't... You know, it's got this feature, and that means it's not very light, but that's okay, because I'd rather have that feature. Like, it's a very good all around camera, right?
Right.
Where a lot of other cameras, you know, you they're lighter or smaller, or yeah, they don't have an optical viewfinder, or yeah, they do this, which gives them a certain advantage or a certain disadvantage.
Sure.
You know, your camera is great for street work when things are still and that thing, but it's not a sports camera. But no one ever said it was a sports camera.
No.
You know, if I really wanted to on my camera or a equivalent Nikon or equivalent Sony, it could be a sports camera if I was a sports shooter, or it could be, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's interesting the choices that you make. Yeah. You know, this week you had done some paintings and you were thinking of shooting them, right?
Yes.
And say, what does that thing have? A 16 megapixel sensor?
16 megapixel sensor. And I wanted to shoot some of my new work and go back and reshoot a lot of my previous work so that I have sort of masters, kind of definitive masters that if I ever wanted to print them full size, which I do want to, then I've got these high res master files that I can print from.
Did you use a Graytag Macbeth color chart in the picture as well?
No, I
that's what all the cool
wait,
people
wait,
do.
What's her name? What's the, we talked about her last week or 2 weeks.
Oh, shoot.
What's her name?
Yeah.
You know, color chart girl.
Yeah.
She was over. No. No, I didn't. I just shot him.
Okay.
But what I was finding is that at 16, I've got to back up a little bit to get the full picture in, which means now I'm down to maybe 12.
Right. Yeah.
In the final image.
Sure.
And I talked to you about it and you said, well, why not just, do them in multiples,
stitch
it together. And my experience with stitching was
back in 1988.
Yeah. Years ago. And, the results were okay. But you had had more experience with it and said, no, it does a great job.
It's so scary good now.
It really is. So I did both, two shot composites and three shot composites, two tilting the camera, toward the top, toward the bottom.
Yep.
And I'm going to write a post about all of this because I've learned some things and learned some little nuancey things that I think might be helpful to folks. It really does a fantastic job, and I'm ending up now with a 28 megapixel file,
Which is more than you'd end up with a D800 that you crop to that size.
Right. So I end up with a 28 megapixel file, which will yield a 16 by 20 image at 285 pixels per inch.
Have you tried printing it?
I haven't. I'm taking a file over this week to print over at Ike's.
Don't you have something you can print that big at home? You could do 16 by 20.
Yeah, I do. I could just print here, I guess. I just wanted to take it over to Ike's. That way I don't have to deal with setting it up and all that.
That's the thing about printing after a while.
Yeah.
It's that stitching thing is really cool. Actually, I've been working on it with some portrait stuff. It's like, I'd love to have a 60 megapixel camera, but I don't. So,
right.
But I want more pixels, so let me try this. And it works. Totally works.
It does work. Again, there are some little nuancey things that help get better results.
Yeah.
But by and large, I was pretty blown away by how well it worked. And you go in and you look at the mask that Photoshop generates and you're
it's
okay,
crazy.
That's just nuts.
It's like you try to figure out what the algorithm is that it's using. It's like, how does it know?
Yeah.
And it's distorting each image to make those things line up.
Yes.
Right. It's like finding waypoints and trying to line those up and doing all kinds of stuff. And then masking in the rest of it. It's incredible.
It is super, super good.
So you did the tilting thing and then you also did the sliding thing, like moving the camera up and down.
Yes.
Just for people out there who are going to write in, Jeffrey's work is flat, so he can actually do the moving the camera thing and it not being that big of a deal because Photoshop will compensate.
Right.
But if you were shooting sculpture, you can't move the camera because then you're changing the perspective on the object and then you're getting different sides of it, in which case it would.
Right.
It just goes straight. I mean, there's an example of, I know you still want to do the video and that stuff, but like that the limitations of your camera can be hacked around.
That particular one, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And sometimes that's what makes it interesting, right?
I fully enjoyed it. And to be clear, if I do buy a new camera, which I think I'm pretty well settled. So, hey, if you're interested in an X-Pro with a 35-1.4, ping me.
That's never been taken out of the box.
Shut up.
That's only had pictures of dumpsters taken with it.
Yeah. No, those I use my iPhone. I still probably would do the same thing because now I've found this process that I really actually enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, now what if I do, instead of just tilting the camera, what if I do it in quadrants like our guy last week?
Yep,
what if I take,
did that
eight
work?
Pictures And I haven't done that one
yet. If you had a longer lens, it would totally, that would work great.
That's the other
thing.
You
could have a 50 megapixel image if you did it that way.
Yeah. So these are some of the things I want to try.
Jeffrey's manual scanning back. I mean, it's essentially what's going on, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a really cool piece of tech and something that you can do in digital and Photoshop that you couldn't do back in the day, or if you tried to, it would be.
Oh my gosh. And you and I were talking about it offline. Can you imagine trying to match those things up by hand?
Oh yeah.
And still do like the distortion and lens correction and perspective shift. You would pull your hair out.
Yeah. This is the kind of stuff that computers are made for.
Yeah.
Like literally this is what, when Turing was thinking about designing computers, he was like, we need to line up photographs. So
Yeah.
It's, you know, but it does kind of, when people choose a camera, there is sort of this tension between something that is specialized that gives you something specific and then going more general, right? And sometimes the friction that is required, like you were saying, if you had a Hasselblad with 60 megapixels in it and you were taking the picture, it might look a little better just because, you know, you're using a CCD thing and maybe you were using strobes or whatever. Put that aside.
Right.
You could do that, but it's also that the process of making your camera do this is actually kind of fun.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
It is. I really enjoyed it. And it was, you know, setting up lights and moving lights and you know, moving
between and
slices. Yeah, and I really enjoyed it.
Right.
And seeing... one of the things I want to do with this article is shoot video of the lights moving along different axes, and you can actually see the surface of my paintings change reflectivity.
Yeah.
You can see the colors shift. You can see the contrast change.
What are you
and I want to be able
lights?
To show that. It's this little Smith Victor constant light kit that was given to me by Patrick Shipstad when he was cleaning out some of his stuff.
Patrick,
who can I tell you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bought the A6000.
Right. You kidding me?
Pre-ordered the A7II and took back the A6000
that he bought like a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Patrick, call into the show. We need to have a discussion. You have an addiction.
So he ordered the new A7,
and I'm an addict.
Yeah. I'm telling you, his gear room looks like the rental department at Calumet.
I love Patrick.
Yeah.
He makes me happy. Knowing that he exists in the world makes me happy.
Yeah, he's great. He's great.
Hey, everybody's got to keep these companies in business, right?
That's right.
But you know, there's something about the friction that you get from certain things. I mean, which is why it was fun when you were playing with my rangefinder or whatever it is. Like, it's not an easy camera to use, but sometimes it not being an easy camera is actually what makes it fun.
Yes.
Right? Like, you know, it's like holding on to it and having a little bite to it, bite to the experience. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It's all in how you approach things and how you work. You know, we've talked about friction a little bit, and it's some
way that you... Sorry.
That's right. It's one of the things that I wanted to talk about today because I've been dealing with friction and
mental
and making
friction?
some realizations about friction. I was riding my bike, which I bike almost every day, and I'm listening to Rush because it's Rush.
As one does.
And I'm listening to Moving Pictures, listening to a song called Vital Signs, which is something... It's a song that I've heard, I don't know how many hundreds of times over the past 30 years. And there's a lyric in it that goes, leave out the friction, or I'm sorry, leave out the fiction. The fact is this friction will only be worn by persistence. Leave out conditions, what is it? Leave out conditions, courageous convictions will drag the dream into existence.
Ah, Neil Peart.
Okay, so I'm thinking about this, and I've heard this song, like I said, hundreds of times, but it hit me in a different way than it has in the past, especially the friction will only be worn by persistence.
Yep.
You got to keep moving forward and or moving in some direction. And a couple weeks ago when we were talking about artist versus entrepreneur, this is something that I've been wrestling with for months now. And it's me trying to shoehorn myself into different roles. And maybe some of you listeners have done this or are doing it. But for me, the entrepreneur thing is more tedium than I'm capable of. You know, and it's pervasive in all areas of my life. It's one of the reasons I don't like games like Grand Theft Auto. I love games. I game a lot, but these sort of sandboxy worlds where you just get dropped in and say, okay, you can do whatever you want, go do it.
Right.
I just end up driving around because I can't decide what I want to do. I need an objective. You know, I need an objective that also offers me a certain amount of freedom or leeway to accomplish. But trying to come up with everything is not something I'm wired for.
Right.
It's not something that I want to move forward. I want to do the work, but with regard to photography or art or my creative endeavors, I also don't want to have to be the one responsible for figuring out how to monetize it, figuring out how to deliver it, figuring out how to, sure, to blah, 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 blah. I just want to do the work.
Yeah. But for some people, those things that you don't want to do is the work that they want to do, right?
That's so right.
Find those people.
That's right.
And, yeah.
And now we live in a time, in a world, which is a terrific little indie flick. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Lake Bell is, and what's the Dimitri, what's his name? Dimitri.
Martin?
Yep. Dimitri Martin, isn't it? We live in a time where you can find people either physically or virtually who are willing to step in and help and do that part of it, because that's where they get their juice.
Right.
As much juice as I get from making things, they get juice from figuring out social media campaigns and marketing blitzes and writing, you know, effective emails that convert and blah, 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 blah. That's where they get their juice.
Something wrong with those people.
Nice.
No, I totally agree with you. And there's also this, it's funny when you were saying, wait, give me the rush line again. The first half.
Leave out the fiction. The fact is, this friction will only be worn by persistence.
When you're saying this friction, you know, I imagine sandpaper that you have to just rub against until the sandpaper wears itself away on your flesh.
Yeah, but I am both sides of that. I'm my own sandpaper.
Yeah, but I like the idea that it's like you need to. You're consuming something of yourself, both effort and your time that you have to live,
right,
trying to accomplish something to get your way through this thing that is difficult to do and grinding against you in the process, you know?
Yeah. And the challenge, one of the challenges at least, is to get there, wherever there is, before the sandpaper wears through, before the jacket gets so threadbare that you are tearing away too much flesh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the challenge.
Yeah. So by the time you get to your goal, you're not half of what you were.
Right. And that,
so is that all about deciding what it is you're trying to achieve?
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. Sure. You know, I've been trying to do everything for the last 5 years and make all the decisions and make, you know, creative decisions, design decisions, technical decisions, platform decisions, you know, and try to be the person that writes everything, designs everything, codes everything, post-processes everything, shoots everything. Blah, 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 blah. And it's making me nuts.
Right. But flip side, you also haven't had to deal with working with other people where the two of you disagree about something, but it's in their wheelhouse. You know what I mean? The frustration that comes with, I think, let's say it was, you know, you and some guy named Tim doing it. Like, Tim wants to, like, push the business in this direction. I don't think that's the right move, but, like, he's the business guy and he thinks this is the best move. That's tearing me apart at night. Aren't you going to have a similar amount of frustration by not having the control that you have now? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and maybe you do, but it's all about finding that sort of symbiotic creative business relationship, I think.
Sure.
You know, it's Steve Jobs finding Johnny Ive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, maybe it's, it is.
You know,
but in that equation, Steve Jobs was also still a dictator to Johnny Ive. I wonder if Johnny Ive's work has changed since Steve Jobs' death, in the sense that I bet you he has much more freedom at Apple than he even had when Steve was there.
Maybe. I mean, the story.
I mean, I know Steve would give him carte blanche, but I still could imagine Steve coming in and saying, "Johnny, this is crap."
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I know that in my own life and work, it's taken me this long to realize that I need help.
Yeah. Sure.
It's taken me this long, and maybe I was ready for help on one level 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it is. But I'm at the point now where I'm not only ready to accept it, I'm ready to ask for it.
Yeah.
And those are big gets for me.
I think that our listenership figured this out in episode 36.
Probably.
It's good for you to come around.
Yeah. Probably.
2 years later. I totally agree.
You know, the friction is part of what drives me.
Yeah. But the friction is also a lot of the fun, isn't it?
It is.
You don't want anything to be too easy.
No.
And you don't want anything to be too hard. It's whatever that, you know, what's the Goldilocks zone that people talk about, where it's like,
right,
you want it to be harder, but not impossible or whatever.
Well,
whatever,
and I have this, God, I don't even know what you call it, Bill. It's not a complex, but I have issues with value and worth.
Your own or everyone's?
My own more than everyone's. Yeah, I have issues with what people.
I think everyone has that. You know, yeah, I think my work and everything I do is crap. I think that I'm useless.
No.
You know,
it's not about that. It's even about accepting things from people, accepting whether it's praise or gifts, yeah, or, you know, even from my mom. I get very uncomfortable when that's sort of levied or bestowed on me.
Because you feel like you're unworthy of the gift, or you feel like you want to do it without the help?
The former.
Okay.
I mean, there is some of the latter, but most of the time it's a worth thing, and it pervades every area of my life. Do I deserve this thing, whatever this thing is? Have I earned this?
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, not buying coffee until it goes on sale, because who am I to spend X number of dollars on, you know what
I
mean?
I pull that crap all the time. Yeah, sure.
Or, well, you know, I could go here, but this place is less, and who, you know, who am I? And I play these scenarios with myself all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think it has to translate into what do I deserve from my life? What have I really earned from my life?
Yeah, but that's assuming, and I am with you, you know, like we're brothers in this.
Yeah.
But some other people, smarter people than me, have said to me, that's assuming some sort of judgment somewhere, you know, somebody who's making decisions, somebody who's an arbiter of who deserves what and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And in my personal worldview, that doesn't exist. And it would be easier if it did, because then I could say, oh, well, apparently they decided that I do deserve or don't deserve or whatever.
Right.
Right.
And I wrestle with the, you know, is this the station that I'm destined to, you know, or resigned to?
Like, you just flipped that in a word, right?
Yeah.
Destiny and resignation?
Yeah.
Sitting and right next to each other? Like, come on, you can't make up your mind whether or not you should be amazing or terrible?
Yeah.
It's kind of what that is, right?
It is. Yeah.
That is, yeah, there's sort of this feeling like, I should be further along than I am. But at the same time, you're just like, how did I even get here?
Yeah. Do I deserve to be even where I'm at?
Now, is that just another element of the imposter syndrome, though?
I don't know. I've tried to reconcile it. And it depends on the day. Depends on the day. I will say that I've completed a couple new pieces over the past couple weeks, and there's a third in the works, and the joy, the sort of inner joy and light and warmth that I'm getting from that is terrific.
But also makes you wonder why, if you feel so good doing it, why is it that you have such a hard time doing it for so long?
Well, I mean, I think that's where, partially at least, that's where commerce comes in. Because okay. I at the level that I could sell this work at, or that I feel like I deserve for this work, and maybe that's another discussion another day, at the level that I feel like I should charge for this, I can't physically produce enough to live on.
Right, but are you doing it? Is your art, is the reason why you weren't doing art for 4 years because you couldn't make enough money to live on it, or is it because you were scared of it?
I think uninspired. I think both of those things work hand in hand. I was scared that I wouldn't make a living doing it. You know? And I still am.
But you don't have to make a living doing everything that you do, right?
No, but that gets me back to the entrepreneur stuff. Where I don't want to have to manage 17 careers or 17, you know, different avenues of creativity to try and just, you know, make rent and you know, have money left over. I'm not capable of that.
Right.
You
need to go get a W-2 job.
Yeah, right. You know, if I'm, you know, Shepard Fairey or, you know, Andrew Salgado, and I'm selling prints or originals for, you know, $25,000, and I'm doing three of them a month, you know, or whatever. Yeah, okay, that's different. But, you know, if the work is sub $1,000 for an original piece,
right?
I can't do
if you do one every 2 weeks. Yeah.
A month, I can't.
And that's also assuming that somebody's going to spend $1,000 and buy them all. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which we all know is definitely not an assumption you can make.
It's difficult. Difficult. I know very few people personally. I mean, I know of more people than I know, but people that I know personally, I would call acquaintances or friends, making a living from their art is very small.
Yeah.
You know, my friend Father Bill Moore.
Yeah.
Sells everything he makes. Every painting he creates, he sells.
Yeah, and he's not buying Maseratis.
Well, no, because that's the other thing. When you're buying one of his pieces, you're not paying him. Mm. You're paying the diocese.
Right, in his example, yeah.
And they, you know, they give him a stipend to live. But, you know, the satisfaction that he feels and the joy that he feels from creating work every day, that's what I'd like to get to.
Sure. But see, but that, assuming that you're making money doing podcasting and the
which
site
I love. Yeah.
And all that
yeah.
stuff, right?
Yeah.
Then why does painting have to be something that involves money?
Well,
why can't it just be for the joy of it? If it gives you that much joy, and what was the word you used? Inner warmth, or you used some sort of term like that.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to reconcile. That's what I'm trying to get lined up is, I mean, you know, we want to grow the show. We want to make more from the show. I want to do another show. The site will hopefully come back and be
better than ever.
Well, I'd like to go with more profitable than ever because I can't do it for free anymore.
Right.
And for 5 years, that's exactly what I did. I did Faded and Blurred for nothing. And when it comes back, it will come back. But part of it is incumbent on readers and listeners.
Right.
You know, I've received hundreds of messages or emails saying, you know, don't take it away, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay. But now you have to help this thing keep going.
How many of you are going to give me $10 a month to keep it going or whatever?
$2 a month, $5, whatever. You know, if that happens, then yeah, I'm fine. I'm good.
Yeah.
But it's the sort of trepidation that won't happen, or it's the past history that didn't happen. Okay.
Well, yeah, right. Of course. Yeah. It's like, why is this any different than last time when I couldn't blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it will be, you know, I think that we have an incredible
community.
Yeah.
It kind of gets me back to what are the two quotes? It's the, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result is the definition of insanity or whatever it is. But it's also the entrepreneurs who make it are the ones who do it over and over and over again until one of them hits. So,
yes.
So does that by definition mean that anybody who's trying to start a business is insane?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Work in progress.
Yeah. Hey, you want to talk about a sponsor? You want to do it? Go ahead. You got you. I'm going to back up and I'm going to give you the mic.
I can't do it on the spot cue. Like that. I was thinking about songs and I kept going back to the Love Boat theme with, you know, it's like, Linda, learning can be so very fun for you. I don't know. Now I lost it because you put me on the spot.
Well, we'll work on that one.
Oh, but I got the second verse. It's like, you can download the projects and follow along in real time.
Real time. That's nice. I like that. So we're talking about Lynda today. Lynda.com. It's an easy and affordable way to help individuals learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. Lynda.com. They work directly with industry experts and software companies to provide timely training, often the day the new versions come out. Jeffrey, could you imagine you get the new version of Photoshop? You go to Lynda, and they're already telling you how to use the new features the day it comes out. It's amazing.
No, and you look, the things that we were looking at, the stitching of the images.
Yeah,
they have tutorials on that.
How many of them?
Oh, I don't know.
All courses are produced at the highest.
There are lots of stitching tutorials.
Oh, okay,
stitching
well, there you
files.
Go. Yeah, there you go.
Rebuilding bad stitching in a panorama.
Oh god.
Stitching in Photoshop CS5 with landscape photography. Photorealism with Burt Monroy.
Can't go wrong with Burt Monroy.
You can't. You really
I was emailing with Burt Monroy once a few years ago. All courses are produced at the highest quality, not the homemade videos on YouTube. And
wait. Go ahead. Do it.
Yeah, so if you go up here to the layers panel and right, and you click, oh wait, hold on a second. No, Ellie! Not that first. Go
Courses are broken up into bite-sized pieces so you can learn at your own pace and learn from start to finish. Or just go find a quick answer to the stitching question that you have. Tools include searchable transcripts, which is a really good idea. So the problem with video a lot of times is like, where in the video is the thing that I'm looking for? You can do that here. Playlists, certificates of course completion that you can publish on your LinkedIn profile. So if you're like Jeffrey and you want to get a W-2 job, you can do that.
Hey, come on now.
Whether you're a beginner or advanced, Lynda.com has courses for all experience levels. And you can learn while you're on the go with Lynda.com apps for iPhone, iPad, and your Android device. One low monthly price of $25 gives you unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. How much does it cost now to like go to, where would people go to learn this stuff? Full Sale. Like, where do people go to learn Photoshop and that kind of stuff now? If you weren't going to, even if you weren't going to.
I don't even know where you'd go, like a physical location. I don't know where you'd go anymore.
Anyway.
I mean, yeah.
$25, Jeffrey.
Not where you're going to get, you know, Chris Orwig or Deke McClellan or something to teach you.
Yeah. $25 for unlimited access to over 100,000 videos.
Yeah.
Like, just go there and you know, take a year off. Spend, you know, the $300 a year that it costs to get Lynda, and you'll have an entire college education all in one fell swoop, you know?
Do you want to take another pass at that one?
One fell swoop.
I think it would cost you more to go to like a
it cost you more in gas to get to the school than it costs you for this.
Or to do like one workshop or a seminar or something.
Yeah, look at that. Look at people. How much people pay for workshops. Unbelievable. Yeah. Look, premium members with an annual plan can download the courses to their iPhones, iPads, or Android and watch them offline. Do you want to do your... Yeah, there you go. Premium plan members can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. And for any software you rely on, lynden.com can help you stay current with all of their updates, learn the ins and the outs of the software tools to be more efficient and productive. And, you know, this is just amazingly great stuff. So go check it out. Go learn something from Burt Monroy.
They've even got a bunch of DaVinci Resolve tutorials.
Yeah, I know. They have a whole course that I've been meaning to go through.
Huh.
Yeah. I just have to get a better video card so I can actually play it in real time.
Right.
So we have a deal worked out with lynden.com to provide you a special offer to access to all the courses free for 10 days. So go try it out for 10 days. And if you like it, you know, come on.
What people. Is it? $25 a month?
Yeah.
Come on.
lynden.com/OTP. So try out lynden.com free for 10 days. Thank you very much for Lynda for their supporting of 5x5 on taking pictures.
Hey, if memory serves, I think you can also... gift a membership. So if you're looking for someone, you know, something to, yeah, you can here, gift memberships. Yeah. If you're looking for something to give someone who's, you know, embarking on a new creative career or, you know, just loves to learn, you know, you can give them a month, you can give them 3 months, or you can give them a whole year.
My, my email address for such gifts is.
Nice. Well played.
Yeah, so go check it out. Lynda, they're great. And you know what? We get a lot of emails about people. How do you learn how to do that? How'd you do that composite? How do you know how to retouch skin? How do you...
Right.
This is the kind of place you go to learn that.
Yep.
All right, so what else we got here? Oh. Okay, do you want to get into the pricing stuff or you want to save that for another day?
We can save it for another day. Okay. It's you know, it's an ongoing discussion of pricing... You know, and I even asked you, well, we can talk about a little bit. I asked, what are we at on time?
Because we're in a little long. We're at 50 minutes, 50 minutes right now.
Let's talk about pricing next time.
Okay.
That's a bigger talk.
All right.
So
what do you think about this thing? So
next week on Taking Pictures, yeah. Pricing.
Flickr. So when you put pictures up on Flickr, one of the options you have is to give it a Creative Commons license.
Right.
A number of different Creative Commons licenses, right? So you could set it up to attribution, non-commercial, or whatever it is. But if you basically say, yeah, this is good to go, use it for whatever you want, Flickr is now going to sell prints of images that are on Flickr as Creative Commons images without giving any money to the people, right?
Yeah, and again,
12,000 different images.
Right? Certain types of Creative Commons licenses allow this. There are also settings, as Bill said, that you can say, "Look, non-commercial use." You know, you. So I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, here's the question: is it? It ticked me off that someone else was selling them when I was giving them away. Yeah, but who are you giving them away to? I was reading a quote by some woman.
Right,
you're giving them away to the world. What is it to say that somebody else doesn't take them and make prints of them? Like, it's sort of, I guess it would be almost better if, well, I guess non-commercial is the big thing there. If you put it in for full Creative Commons, then if you wanted non-commercial, you should have put non-commercial.
Right. In the article, Yahoo says that it is complying with the terms of Creative Commons by selling only images that permit commercial use.
Right.
The licenses, quote, are designed for the exact use case that we're enacting through our wall art product, end quote, says Bernardo Hernandez, vice president of Flickr.
Bernardo Hernandez.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
No.
It's got to be French.
It's got to be French. Yeah.
Stéphane Louveau.
Yeah. Or actually, it could work for Spanish. Like, Juno Diaz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Still Robert Duano. He's the best. He's the best. Yeah, I mean, okay, so you may not like it, but is this a case of...
I think what they're doing is legal.
Yeah, is it smarmy? Maybe, but it seems...
Wait, I don't use Flickr. Is there an option on Flickr for you to sell your prints and get a couple bucks?
I don't know. I don't use Flickr. I'm not sure. We should look into that. Anybody that uses Flickr, chime in, podcast@ontakingpictures.com.
The thing is, how much are they actually going to make? They're selling them for $49. Canvas prints of the photos, $49. Look, first of all, I don't think Flickr is going to make a whole lot of money doing this either.
But that, you know, that's
but really... you made the mistake in choosing to have it be Creative Commons.
Well, is it, yeah, you agreed to their terms.
I mean, mistake in the sense that if you're pissed that they're selling it, it's like, well, right. you said somebody could sell it. So I don't understand what people are mad about.
It's
not like any picture that you put up on Flickr is suddenly for sale by Yahoo.
Right. You got to read the fine print. It's the same thing going on with Facebook right now. They're changing their TOS in January.
Right.
To basically state that anything you upload, we can sell.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's the thing. Even with the Facebook thing, yes, even if that's what the legal thing said, they're not doing it so that they could take your picture from your party and sell it to Budweiser for ads on TV. You know what I mean? They're doing it so that, like, if they have a Budweiser thing and you happen to have a Budweiser beer in your hand, they could just stick your picture next to it on the Facebook little thing in the corner. You know what I mean? Or whatever. In the same way that it's like, you know, Jeffrey likes Oreos and it has a little picture of you next to the Oreo thing.
I do like Oreos.
Oreos are delicious, and anyone who doesn't like them is dead to me. especially the vanilla ones. Those are really good.
Wow.
But you understand what I'm saying, though, right?
I do.
I feel like people make this out to be a really big deal, and it is a big deal in the sense that, yeah, these people are taking your rights, and yes, they are overextending the language they use so that they do, because they want to make it as useful to them as possible. I don't think these people are out to be completely malevolent. Personally, I don't stick like my more serious quote unquote work up on Facebook. I will link to my blog from Facebook or Twitter. Yeah, but I'm not sticking it up there.
What if Facebook uses your picture of, I don't know, Neil Gaiman or something,
right. Yeah.
to alongside of, you know, Gaiman's new book, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah. And if I had put that picture up on Facebook, then yeah, that was my own fault for sticking up on Facebook.
Okay.
I will tell you that I think it's crappy, and I think it makes me not want to use a lot of these social media things. And I got to tell you, as time goes on, I'm much less, you know, there was a scene in Newsroom this week, which is what I was going to bring up to you before the show. And there's a scene where this guy is talking to his girlfriend who just went to, he works for like a big news thing, like a, you know, MSNBC kind of thing. And his girlfriend just left and went to work for some place that gives her bonuses based on clicks, you know, like a BuzzFeedy kind of place.
Sure.
And she's just like, you just want people to like you. He's like, I don't care about likes or clicks or whatever it is. He's just like, it's just ugly. And it's true. Yeah. It is ugly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's chasing an illusion.
Well, it goes back to Seth.
Yeah.
You know, you're chasing like counters, not building relationships.
Yeah, but even building relationships, what are you building there? You're building people who follow you. Well, you know, what is that? That's just another list of people and another, you know.
I
have thousands of people who listen to us right now, and I love the fact they listen to it. But like if it was a matter of all of those people, if it was a matter of people listening to this episode and rating us up and down for this episode, this was thumbs up episode, this was thumbs down episode, would that actually give us information that you and I would change how we do what we do? It shouldn't.
No, but the fact that we get terrific, very thoughtful emails from Mike Sakasagawa or voice messages from Tom in Michigan or get to hang out with David and Freddie and Chris, and those are relationships that happen because of something that we did virtually.
Absolutely. But those people are not writing us or friends with us because we want to use them commercially to build a business in that way. Like, or at least I don't think about my relationship with them in that way.
No, you know? But they are relationships that we've built, cultivated.
Yeah, right. But I feel like those are real relationships in the sense of real world relationships, pre-internet relationships that just happen to have been facilitated by the internet. And if that's what Seth is talking about, then I'm down with that. Sometimes, though, a lot of that stuff just feels like lip service to make it sound better that more followers means more impact, or, you know what I mean? Like all these sort of businessese words, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
And I just worry that that's not, that's that shouldn't be our goal, right?
It's not the goal.
Right. But for some people, it is the goal, I guess is my point. Mm-hmm. And so like these people putting this stuff up on Flickr and whatever it is, it's like, great. You know, if you have a community of people like our OTP community on Google+, whatever its faults of the platform and whatever it is,
right,
there are 1300 people up there posting work and talking to each other and getting opinions on their work and actually having conversations. And it's not just like, this is a great pick. It's more like, you know, these people are having constructive conversations on a lot of this.
Yeah.
And discussions about stuff that is much deeper than the same conversation that would be had on Facebook in this instance.
Agreed.
Right.
Agreed.
And I think that if that's why people are going to, back in the day with Flickr was about those groups, right? Where people would do similar stuff. Wasn't that like one of the big things about Flickr? It was that people would have, they'd be in certain Flickr groups and the conversations were really good and people became friends outside of Flickr and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's the kind of thing we're building. But if you're just on Flickr to make sure your cat pictures get whatever it is and you put them up a Creative Commons, you know, commercial right. use.
Just to get a hug.
Right. And you're pissed that Flickr's now using them to sell them. Well, you gave it away. And now you're pissed that somebody's using it for something you disagree with? Well, you shouldn't have given it away. I don't know. It seems like a little bit like, you know, complaining and what is the old thing about leaving the barn door open? You know, you're closing the barn door after the whatever's leave, whatever the stupid thing is. You understand what I'm saying? You're just letting me tie myself by my own, hoist myself by my own petard. What? Do you understand?
I do understand.
Okay. And you agree with me. You're just being a schmoo.
I agree with you to a point. Yeah. I mean, I think that, again, are they within their legal rights?
Yeah.
Sure. Should there maybe be some explanation about what Creative Commons means and what these actually mean for those people who maybe are unclear or are uncomfortable reading sort of legalese and just go, oh, check the default settings and go.
Well, you know, it's funny. One of our listeners put up my headshot on my Wikipedia page a while back.
Okay.
And it got bounced by the Wikipedia people because apparently it's not listed on my site as being available for usage as Creative Commons or whatever.
Oh.
Yeah. And so they wrote me and, you know, I've been going back and forth and
wait, they, the person or they, the Wikipedia people,
they, the listener, which
okay, okay.
just for purposes of whatever we'll rename nameless. But Randy Duchesne, friend of the show, actually took that photo of me. So it's actually not my right to put it up as Creative right. Commons, but I was looking into what is involved in putting up as Creative Commons. And, you know, you got to link back to Creative Commons and you have to have the right icons underneath it and put it in, embedded inside the metadata and blah, 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 blah. And so I wrote and I know that Randy is not the kind of tech head like me who could actually figure this stuff out. It's a pain in the neck, you know.
Right.
And I said to Randy, I said, you know, hey, do you mind if I use that portrait and put it up as Creative Commons so that people could use it on Wikipedia or whatever else? And he's like, yeah, you know, no problem. So now I have to figure out how to, you know, do all this stuff. And do I want big, ugly Creative Commons logos underneath the picture on my about page? You know what I mean? It should be easier, you know? And
yeah.
And Flickr should make it easier for if I go to Flickr and I find some picture of, I don't know, you know, the Grand Canyon that I really love, for me to be able to write the person and order a print as some sort of like maybe they do this. I, you know, stand back if I'm wrong, but why even have the thing of Flickr selling these pictures? Why can't everyone just sell their own pictures as a checkbox?
Right.
You know,
right
there. And they
almost
get 50%
like
of it or whatever
type thing.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
You know,
yeah.
Like, why is this not part of in the first place? Why does Flickr have to go out of their way to sell these things when the people could just sell them themselves easy enough and Flickr take a little cut of it or whatever? I don't know. I think that it's a little overbearing, this whole thing.
All right.
That's my opinion.
All right.
We should talk about our other sponsor. You want to read this one?
You heard it here.
Nice.
Yes.
Do you need to pull it up?
I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Yeah. So here's the thing, Jeffrey. in my life, one of my goals for the new year is to do more accounting.
Oh, awesome.
So do you have a thing for me?
you want to do more accounting.
Because
accounting is good.
It's super fun.
hey, you know what? I am thrilled at people that love accounting in business. It was something I just couldn't dig. But thankfully, there is
for everyone
a solution.
But me.
Yeah, there's a solution. Less accounting.
Okay.
Less accounting. I think what a great name. I mean, it kind of just tells you right up front.
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty great.
Accounting software for business owners that dislike bookkeeping.
And so, honestly, most people don't like bookkeeping, right?
Right, right. If you own your own photography business or you're a freelance photographer and you want an easy way to take care of your finances, less accounting is for you. Most people don't like bookkeeping, right, Bill?
I love it, but most people don't. I'll give it
Yeah. But it's necessary in order to keep your finances in order, especially when you're dealing with clients. Accounting was designed to take care of the hassle. Stay off. Don't go into a rant about clients. To take care of the hassle of bookkeeping for you. Think of it as your own personal bookkeeper. Anyone can learn to use it. Even you, Bill.
Even me. Thanks.
It says it right here. Even you, Bill.
No. Even Bill.
if you're coming from another program like QuickBooks, or you've never used any sort of accounting or bookkeeping software before, less accounting has all the tools you need to stay organized. You can send invoices. You can track and categorize expenses. You can save contacts, send reminders like, hey, you know, it's been 30 days. Yeah. I know we're on a net 30 and it's been 30.
Tick tock.
Yeah. how about you go ahead and kick down with the cash? You can track mileage. So if you're driving to photo shoots and you want to declare mileage on taxes, you can keep track of that.
Sandy.
Works with thousands of domestic U.S. banks. So you can import your banking information. You can even import contacts from things like Basecamp or Gmail, which we just started using Basecamp. I mean, I know people have been using Basecamp for years.
It's actually pretty slick.
It is pretty slick. Yeah. You know, if you're wanting to take control of the finances of your business, we've got a deal for you. And if you listened a couple of weeks ago, you know that this is a ridiculous deal. If you go to lessaccounting.com, enter the offer code ontakingpictures.
Okay.
They're going to give you not only the satisfaction of getting things done quickly and easily, but they're going to give you 82% off the first 2 months.
I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
82%.
Yeah.
So what's left over? That would be,
if I was good at that, I wouldn't need less accounting.
83, 84, 85, 67, 89, 90. 13%. No.
Jeffrey, I think it's 17% is what you're looking for.
18%.
Yeah, there you go. That could be right.
18%. That's all you're paying.
Yeah, but what if I don't want to, what if I'm not sure about it and I...
Trial, baby.
Trial.
14 days.
14 days.
Nothing to lose. Check out Less Accounting. Take a few minutes to set up. Save you a lot of frustration in the future. Lessaccounting.com. They've got a little demo, 15-minute instructional introduction to bookkeeping for your business. Ridiculously comprehensive stats. Give them a try. Lessaccounting.com. Use On Taking Pictures as the offer code. And we thank Less Accounting very much for supporting On Taking Pictures.
It is a thank you, Less Accounting. Accounting, the business side of business, even if you like the sales side of the business, dealing with the client side of the business, like the accounting people.
Chasing people down for money. God,
when you have a new client, I don't know if for all the people out there who like taking pictures and are thinking, I'm gonna become a magazine portrait photographer like Bill, let me tell you something. Dealing with the accounting departments of magazines and the amount of paperwork you have to fill out and then to wait months and months for checks and that kind of stuff is mind numbing.
What are the magazines that you deal with? Is there a commonality? Are most
standard
people on a
net
30 or net 60?
It's funny. I worked for a magazine recently who isn't using the pictures until March.
Okay.
But paid my invoice in a week and a half.
But that's not really the standard, right?
No, and they're a big magazine, and I was like, wow, this is the way it is, right? This is where it's at. I was talking to a friend of mine who is working for a giant software company and was told, yeah, our accounting department takes a long time. Like net 30, forget it. Net 60, forget it. Net 90, probably not.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I was you're not getting paid for 3 to 4 months.
Right. So, you know, you're doing the work, but like you've got 3 months of rent to pay in the meantime, you know?
Yeah. That's Universal was a net 60 to net 90.
Net 60 to 90. Yeah. I mean, it depends. Advertising clients, if you get like the big gigs are typically longer, but I mean, those are the reasons why you have, an agent who can be the bad cop, you know?
Right.
So you could be like, hey, I'd love working with you, whatever it is. And your agent could be like, if you don't pay me next week, we're suing, you know?
Right.
Like that's, you know, but that part of the business is, ugh, it is like no bueno. Hey, by the way, can I interject something into the list here?
Yes.
Can I 3-minute computing story from last week? My mother, I bought her in 2008. We bought her a 22 or 21 inch iMac.
Right. 21.5, sure.
Yeah, right. So, you know, whatever, like, you know, $1,500 computer at the time, and like I was a little flush. So for her birthday, we bought her a computer. And it also meant that I'd have to worry about her computer less, right? Because harder to break. And if it broke, she could always just take it to an Apple store. So so it's been working fine, whatever it is. When she was out of the house I grew up in before she bought this house, she wanted something smaller because she didn't want to set up her thing. So she bought a MacBook Air laptop, like a 13-inch, about 3 years ago, 2-3 years ago. So I think the same one Conrad has, like the nice little 13-inch one.
Yep.
But apparently she never liked it because apparently she doesn't like trackpads, so she never uses it. So she keeps using this 5-year-old iMac. And the other day, she turns it on or wakes it up, and she gets the whole like gray crawling down the screen.
Yep.
And she's like, Billy, like, how do I fix this? And I was like, well, that could be any number of problems, but you're coming down for Thanksgiving. Bring the computer down, right? Now, of course, my mother hasn't backed anything up. Even though I bought her a little external USB drive just to keep plugged into the back all the time.
Just as a time machine thing?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, just keep it plugged in, time machine will do the job, and then you don't have to worry about it, right? So apparently since they moved into this house 2 years ago, they never plugged that other drive in. Typical stuff, right? So she gets down here with the computer. I plug it in and I think to myself, you know what? This is a 2008 computer and it has FireWire on it. I can use Target Disk Mode.
Yeah, you can. Which they've since gotten rid of.
Which was the coolest thing about Macintosh for a long time. So you hold down T when you turn an older Mac on, and it go and basically what shows up on the screen is just like a FireWire logo that bounces around, and your computer, plug it into another machine with FireWire, and it acts as if it's just an external drive to the other computer.
Right.
So you could get to everything on the drive. So I did that. It went into Target Disk Mode, plugged into my computer, and I cloned my mother's drive so that I ran like disk repair or whatever stuff on it, and it showed no errors. So I cloned the drive, pulled it back out, so all the data was good. And then I'm like, okay, we have the data. Now let's figure out what's wrong. Turned off, turned it on normally, and it gives like the 3 beeps or whatever it is.
Right, the dee-dee-dee, yeah.
Right, which turns out is bad RAM.
Huh.
And so there was 2 sticks of RAM in it, one gigabyte, 1 2-gigabyte that I had added because it originally had 2. I brought a 2-gig thing and stuck it in so it had 3. It turned out the 1 single gig, the original Apple RAM, had gone bad 5 years in. Have you ever heard of that?
No, but now if you buy a 21.5-inch iMac, you're kind of hosed.
It's because soldered in.
It's soldered onto the board, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I pulled 1 stick of RAM out, booted up fine.
So now she's just running with 2?
Right, which is way too little to run on that machine. So we ordered 2 twos, like a new kit,
right,
on Amazon for $48 or whatever it is. So she'll have 4 gigs of RAM, which will be plenty for that machine. It might actually be enough that she could install Mavericks or even Yosemite on it. Like, it's otherwise fine, you know?
Right. What's the maximum that the motherboard will support, you know?
It might be 8.
Okay.
But I looked into it once and it ended up being really expensive.
For so, that
Yeah, and it's like, okay, do you want to spend $200 on RAM for a machine that's 5 years old? Like,
where did you go for the RAM? Did you go to Crucial?
I went on Amazon and just found iMac RAM for, you know, it's SODIMMs 800 PC. Okay. The thing is that it's DDR2, so it's old RAM, you know?
Yeah, it's old laptop RAM.
Yeah, basically. Exactly, right. But anyway, long story short, it ended up being fixed, but Target Disk Mode, man.
Yeah, that was for such the win.
Apparently, there is a Target Disk Mode with Thunderbolt that I hear exists.
Huh.
I don't know if that's true or not. I'll have to do a little research.
But then you've got to have a Thunderbolt external drive.
No, you could act as if one machine is an external drive for the other one.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And I think that there is... Yeah, look at this. From last year, there is a Target Disk Mode that works with FireWire or Thunderbolt. Look at that. Huh. I'm going to put this in the show notes.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a little tip and trick for you, but turned out it's going to be all right. So maybe she gets another year or two out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And then we upgrade to the Retinas when they're a decent price, and then she has a super
good. Yeah, you'll have Retina and Broadwell chips.
God, I will tell you, Screamer. Though, working on a machine that has a spinning 5,400 RPM laptop drive inside of it, or whatever's inside of that. Actually, I think it might be a 3.5-inch drive, but it's a spinning drive, not an SSD. It was so slow. It was so slow. It was painful.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, put that out there. All right. So, hey, what are we up to? We're up to let's talk about the group. How'd they do
this group? Week? They did great. They did great. Really terrific stuff for sound.
I liked surprising. A bunch of these.
Yeah.
What are you surprising? Why was it surprising?
Because this was a little more abstract, right? Sound.
I think they like them when they're abstract.
Russ, terrific picture of guy playing a banjo.
Yep.
In somewhere in Seattle. I love how he's all cryptic about it. Let's see.
Which one did I really like?
Cams, that fiddle shot.
Great. Yep. Yep.
And just other great shots. Blake Coble, that shot of his wife in the triathlon thing.
Yep.
Going up the half pipe.
Yeah.
That's a great photograph.
And wait, I also like the one of the Robert Chianimacchio. Wow, that's a hard name. Chianimacchio. You know what I'm talking about? You know that name? Anyway. He has this one of the trees, and he says, sound, it's the sound of peace, freedom, or loneliness.
Yeah, see, I love that shot. Took with it the all. Snow?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm Sebastian right Lee did the really to... great one of the Milky Way, sort of, over the tree.
Yep. I like the Peter Evans shot of the green, whatever that house is, with the reflection.
Yeah, Lance did the one of the distortion over a church soundboard, like where he had it all like kind of like cut up. People did some really neat stuff here.
Yeah. Freddie, cool stage shot.
Yeah.
Lots of really, really great work.
I like these ones that Russ Olney did of the weird little jazz saxophone player.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Really, really good stuff, you guys. More entries for Horizon. Mark Link, Morocco. Evening light over Morocco. Terrific panorama.
Morocco.
Yeah. Really good. Holger, cool shot of the guy sleeping in the subway station.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are you going to make these people do next?
Bro? Okay. So this one is kind of inspired by last week's photographer of the week, who Sohei Nishino.
Sohei Nishino.
Which we're going to put a video in the show notes, and seeing this video it makes me even more impressed with his work.
Yeah, listener sent in basically. So what we've learned is that he actually does use prints and scissors and a big board and collage them together.
Yes.
Yep.
Thousands of photographs.
So and is he going and taking that many pictures from that many different vantage points in a city?
Yes.
So how long does it take him to go take the pictures?
A long time.
It feels like it would take weeks just to take the pictures.
Yeah. He maps out the cities in quadrants and then goes and takes pictures for each quadrant and then assemble. I want to see his cataloging. How does he keep track of this came from?
Well, you know what you do. You get a camera with GPS.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
That's how I would do it.
Yeah. Maybe we can write to him. Anyway, so this week, collage.
Okay, so we gotta take pictures and collage them. Okay.
Yeah, whether you want to digitally collage them, great. Whether you want to print them out,
yeah,
that's great. I will ask one thing, and I know, you know, we've all done it, but try and shoot the assignments. Don't just go digging through your Lightroom catalog and go, oh, this one kind of fits, yeah, and stick that in there.
Okay.
Go shoot them. That's the fun of it, is go out and shoot, get out into the world. You know, don't just look through your catalog, whatever. I mean, you can, I guess, if you can't get out or you can't get to the, but it's more fun to go out and shoot.
All right. And I'm sure that there's collage apps on the App Store that will do similar.
Sure.
Stuff,
you want to use your phone? Yeah. Great. Yeah. You want to use film? Great. You want to use digital? Great. Love it. Collage. Have fun with it.
All right.
Let's see what you come up with.
So before we get to our photographer of the week, we got an email this morning, very early this morning, which means it was yesterday afternoon for today afternoon for Matheson.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Afternoon.
Now, Christopher Matheson does a great thing where he actually keeps track of all of our photographers of the week. Was that on a blog post he's got?
Yeah. And he's a terrific photographer.
We need to find a link to that. Can you find a link to that? I always forget where the link is.
It's in the sidebar.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Perfect. Yeah. And he's got a really cool project that he's writing about, that he's a personal project that he's just working through that you guys are going to dig. So stay tuned for that.
Wait, where is it in the sidebar? How do I get to that?
Okay. So you got to go read more.
Oh, okay. Okay. You go to the main
chrismatheson.com/on-taking-pictures.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Oh, see there it is. Current list of assignments. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So Chris maintains not only the list of assignments, but a list of photographers of the week, which is, you know,
fantastic.
Amazing.
Right. Yeah, so, all right. So he's done this great thing. It's keeping track of all this stuff. And he did a little, we were talking the other day. Was somebody complaining to us, or were they just noticing that we have a lot of white guys?
I think it was just brought up as, right, you know, here, by the by.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think it was a complaint.
So he did a little unofficial analysis of the people we have chosen for photographers of the week and who they have, and he sent us some stats. So apparently, according to his numbers, 85% male, 15% female, 88% Caucasian, 12% not, 66% North American, 26% European, and Africans, Asians, Australians, and the rest are single digits, right? And like, certainly this is not any sort of conscious decision on our part to exclude other people.
No, not
and,
at all.
You know, here's the thing. If you did the same thing with architecture and painting and cooking and all the rest of it, you'd probably end up with more men than women, more white guys than not, more European, you know what I mean? Like you could argue that it's a cultural bias in our culture. And the fact that we're talking about what began as a Western medium, probably, it's interesting stuff. But I mean, we are trying to do better of spreading the wealth a little bit. Although, yeah, you know what? It's honestly, when I go do research, or when we're trying to, a lot of people send us, oh, here's this great African photographer, or here's this, you know, Japanese woman who does whatever, you know, we generally use them when we get them. So if people have ideas for this, send them along, you know?
Right.
If you go look for like lists of women photographers that are like notable, from the past, not like current ones, but just like people who've been around for a long time, it's usually like the same. It's Brooke White. It's, you know, yeah,
Julia
Dean
Margaret
Arbus.
Cameron.
It's exactly. Yeah. All of whom we've done, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not for, it's a lot of these are people for whom are heroes of Jeffrey and I, just from our years of looking at this stuff and seeing what we like and what we don't like, and you know, that kind of thing. You know, I'm sorry. I was
just going to say it's an interesting little factoid that Christopher includes. Interesting find, he writes. I noticed that many of the photographers died within a month of their birthdays. Keep that in mind as your birthdays approach.
You know what the thing is? I'm turning 40 in 6 weeks.
Yeah, you are.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I hope I don't die.
No, you're not going to die.
Matheson,
well, I mean, you're going to. You're going to, but you know.
But yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you. I would like to address. We talked about an email from Mike Sakasagawa last show.
Oh, right.
And
right.
We kind of interpreted what he was asking a little incorrectly. And I would like to tackle that next next show if we could.
We could totally do that. So for today's photographer of the week, we are going to choose a woman from Australia. So it clicks two of our boxes. Actually, she's New Zealand or Australian? I think she's Australian, isn't she?
I think she's be clear, because they don't like it when you get it wrong.
Yeah, she now lives in, she's Australian born but lives and works in New Zealand. So I was right on both counts.
All right.
Anne Geddes. Is that how they pronounce it? Geddes?
I believe it's Geddes, yeah.
Okay.
Interesting choice, Wadman. This is not something that I would expect from you.
No, and I am not a fan. So I'll just put that out there. So you guys have all, if you don't know the name, you know the work. Anne is the person who takes all those pictures of babies in flower costumes.
Or pea pods. Yeah.
As, you know, all of that stuff. You've seen them in books. You've seen them in calendars. You've seen them as prints and posters on the wall. To me, it is the photographic equivalent, is the baby equivalent of hang in there posters at your dentist.
Or like Thomas Kincaid paintings,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But can I say one thing?
Yep, sure. Go ahead.
Name a rival of her.
Oh, no. She is this world, right? She has certainly...
She has created a brilliant empire where
absolutely.
She is the only one that you can think of that does this kind of work.
Yeah.
And for what it is, it's brilliant.
No, she's very good at it. Her skills are excellent. The quality of the images is very good. The light is nice. The whatever. I just find it so incredibly saccharine in what's the word I'm looking for? Subject matter.
Uh-huh.
This is the kind of thing where it's so sweet that it actually detracts from how sweet the thing actually is. Babies and children and whatever it is are wonderful and beautiful and all that kind of stuff. This, to me, sort of trivializes it in some way.
Okay.
It takes the magic out of it, where I'm sure she's trying to do something different. Now, this is one man's opinion. Apparently, this woman makes millions of dollars a year on calendars for people, so apparently people love this stuff. But yeah, I don't know. She is huge, right? She is an empire unto herself.
Yes. She has created her own sort of corner of the market where virtually no one challenges her.
Yeah.
And to me, that is seems to be, she was on Creative Live a couple weeks back.
Yeah. I put a
link
in the
show notes. Just a lovely person.
I'm sure she is. It's not a personal attack. It's like if somebody who is a really great writer, but I completely disagree with what they're writing, you know, it happens. I don't like how she,
do you find it exploitive or in some way?
Yeah, there's that. But a lot of it is just sort of like you're trying to make something special out of something that is far more special than you can ever try to make it in your way. You know what I mean? It's just my sense of it. It's also my feelings on all kinds of relationship stuff too. You know, it's just like, you know, having a big wedding, it's like, well, my relationship with that person defines my relationship. It has nothing to do with how big of a wedding I put on or how big of a ring I give somebody, or, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
So does the subject matter cloud how you see the work apart from the subject matter?
Okay. I think that the work is manipulative. I think it's trying to make everyone go, oh, where it's like, I don't know. It just feels forced to me. But again, you know, the set design, the whatever is all very beautiful. I think it's, you know, it's better than Jill Greenberg stealing stuff out of kids' mouths to make them cry. You know, like that I find gross.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
Look at this. I think that some of it is kind of kitschy, but then some of it, like the picture I just sent you.
Yep.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, but that is that image of this look like an African woman pregnant. That in many ways is not what people know her for.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. What people know her for are babies with cabbage leaves on their heads sitting in cabbage leaves.
Right. Or, and what do you think about those things?
You know, that doesn't tick a box for me. Maybe because I'm not a parent.
Yeah.
Maybe because I've never had the sort of desire to be a parent. Babies aren't that interesting to me.
Right. See, I think babies are fantastic, but I don't think that this makes babies more fantastic. If anything, it detracts from the wonder that is babies to me.
Okay.
So I think you and I dislike it for different reasons.
I don't dislike it.
Right.
I don't actively dislike it like you do.
Right. Yeah. See, it's a little offensive to me for some reason.
I don't.
You
get
just
that.
Don't care.
It's just meh. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And again, I'm sure that there are, you know, hundreds of people listening right now who are just like, "What is wrong with you?" You know.
You know, there are a few in here that I really like, actually.
Yeah.
It's what am I in? If you go in Miracle, the gallery Miracle.
Sure. We're on her website, which we'll put a link in the show notes, so you can just Google her. Which
top one? Left.
Top left. You won inside the flower leaves.
Yeah, I like that.
See, that's weird to me.
Pure yeah, top
the,
right.
The ones the, with the babies don't do it for me. The feet one is nice.
And that the one next right. to it, the one next to it, the baby wrapped in the cotton. I like that.
That's okay. I think the pregnancy ones are more interesting. Maybe because.
Okay. The one where the babies are just hanging in gauze bags. That's kind of creepy to me.
That's a little like something out of some weird, arachnophobia.
Yeah. Or like Andromeda Strain. Yeah, or some weird sci-fi, like they're growing them. Ooh, I don't like that one at all.
Ooh. To turn you into this.
Yeah. No. Oh yeah. Ooh. No, I don't like that one.
Anyway,
I you know, she apparently wonderfully philanthropic person.
Yep.
And if you look at the products, if one of your goals is to monetize and market your photography,
then take pictures of babies.
That's not what I was going to say. I was going to say, take note of what she's done.
Oh yeah. She's a machine. And you know? I mean, going back to your question of whether I do feel like it's a little exploitive.
Okay.
I don't know, people's love of babies. I don't know. There's just something about it that just like hits
kind
me
of
the wrong way.
Preying on cutesy.
Yes. Yeah. Preying on our reptilian brain love of cute babies, you know?
Okay.
It's the same thing with like overly, although wait, somebody, oh, one of our listeners, what the hell's his name? Did you see the pictures of, oh, who did it? Somebody, one of our listeners, I think, found a puppy. Did you hear this?
No.
His wife found a puppy in a bag on the side of the road.
Oh, come on.
A little five-week-old puppy. And it is the cutest thing you have ever seen.
Oh, what is wrong with people?
Carl LeCary, I think his name is. Yes.
What is okay? What kind of animal are you that you dump a dog in a bag on a side of?
Jeffrey, you have no idea. Like it is. I'm going to send you right now. This you're going to see what I'm talking about, and you're going to be like, I don't have any idea. Some people must be heartless. I sent you a picture. But yeah, I feel like when people like,
are you kidding me? Somebody put this in a bag.
Uh huh. Yeah. Found it.
Oh, come on.
5 week old pup on the side of the road in a garbage bag.
Oh, good. Come on.
Yeah.
No,
right.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. And I look, I'm
that just makes my heart hurt.
Uh-huh. But I'm not, now I'm not comparing Ann Geddes to the person who left the dog outside the road, but there is a certain amount of like, you're preying on the fact that we are super hypersensitive to such things. And look, people like, I guess I don't like people fetishizing babies, period. You know, I think it's worth more than that.
I'm
you're overwhelmed by this puppy, right?
I'm broken for today. I can't believe that some, you're an animal. Whoever did this,
you they're the ones that should be euthanized, right?
Yeah. Somebody get a pillowcase and a bunch of batteries.
All right. So moving on. If you guys have any opinions on Ann Geddes that we disagree with, let us know. I want to know what it is that people love so much. That I'm missing apparently.
I think
her work is beautiful. It just feels so forced.
I don't have the reaction to it that you do. I don't have the negative reaction to it that you do.
And that is the thing about a lot of the stuff we talk about. It's like, you know, we're both, you, me, and these thousands of people who listen are entitled to their opinions of these things, you know?
Right.
That's what makes the world a great place.
Just, you know, whatever you do, don't be a jackass and put a puppy in a bag. Come on.
Yeah. Right. Oof. So, if you want to send a puppy to Jeffrey, you can send it to.
No, don't send me a puppy.
If you want to get a hold of us, podcast@ontakingpictures.com. I am at Bill Wadman. You are at Jeffrey Sidoris, ERYSSDDORIS.
SSD? No, not SSD.
SAD.
SADDORIS. SSD. I'm fast. And I'm quiet.
Or you can leave us a voicemail, 347-687-9411, like Tom in Michigan and a few other people.
Yep.
We always love getting the voicemails. They're fun.
Yeah, they are.
Let us know what you think, and we will be back next week with more. You got anything else to add?
No. Thank you, everyone. Sorry to kind of wig out, but just come on. Puppies.
I know, right?
In a bag.
Yeah.
Animal.
Yeah.
Have a great week and collage, and we will be back next week talking about, what are we talking about? What do we put for the next week?
You wanted to talk about pricing and...
Oh, pricing and what makes a good photograph?
Oh, we're talking about that. Oh, right.
That was in Mike's,
Right.
Because we were on the wrong side of the fence.
Yeah. But I think, our conversation was also really good too.
I do too. And yeah. I think Mike has, he's kind of the unofficial third host. He writes some great emails, and Mike, keep them coming. I don't always respond or reply to the emails, but some of the most thoughtful emails and terrific conversations. So keep them coming, please.
Yeah.
Good?
Good. Yeah, I think we're good.
All right. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Right. See you.
Going on and on the way we are for so something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say.